Good day, and this is Dr. Z from the program, Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thanks for tuning in right here to Progressive Radio Network. And we're really excited to bring you this cutting-edge information about health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today. Dr. Kamai, the natural nurse, has the day off, and I'll be conducting the interview. And we have a special guest who is the author of several books, and his name's Lloyd Wright. And he released a new book on natural treatments for hepatitis C therapy. And Lloyd is the author of this book, Do-It-Yourself Guide for Health, and he knows all about the rigors of life with hepatitis C and wandering in the dark when doctors have no answers. In his book, which follows his other book, Triumph Over Hepatitis C, he basically says that 200 million people worldwide, 5 million Americans, have hepatitis C. And most of them use just mainstream medicine, which basically consists of interferon, without lots of different results, many failures, and then they go on to have hepatic cancer and then liver failure. But Lloyd's book builds on the years of work that he studied and brings together all the information that he's amassed in the literature and how people can take control of their health and combat this deadly virus. And then he's going to talk about his own story, where he contracted hepatitis C through a hospital blood transfusion. And basically, doctors told him to get his affairs in order because he was, hepatitis C is a silent type of problem. And then all of a sudden, it kind of smolders like a forest fire analogy and then flares up. And so, basically, he's going to be talking about how he battled this, and what types of exact strategies that one can use for Hep C. And by the way, I might add, not only hepatitis C. When I, being a naturopathic doctor and professor, I often teach my students very similar protocols that Lloyd has developed, and I find that it's really helpful for many types of liver conditions, many types of hepatitis, even if you are out there. Because you may say, well, I don't have hepatitis C. I'm going to tune out the show. But if you're a painter, if you install carpet, if you work in the dry cleaning industry, if you clean houses or you're someone who refinishes furniture or work in the auto industry or exposed to petrochemicals or a driver driving on the road exposed to diesel fumes, or you pump your own gas like most of us do, and get a little gas on your hands, unfortunately, and certainly smell the fumes, this book can help you because you want to make friends with your liver and not be a foe. Are you there, Lloyd?
I'm here.
Hey, good to hear from you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, more in depth, your story there and how you ended up enhancing your body's natural ability to fight off this thing.
Well, after interferon failed, which it often does more than people hear, I was told, that this was a terminal condition and I simply wasn't ready to die yet. And I just happened to live right down the street from a naturopath who was Dr. John Finnegan. And I worked with him for 18 months developing this program that I outline in all of my books, and it worked, and it worked well, and since then it's worked on an awful lot of people. And for those who don't get cured, they tell me they get out of bed, they get off the couch, they forget about disability, and they go back to work. They get their life back, and that's a very important thing when you're feeling sick and not doing well.
Absolutely. I mean, when people hear this, they may be incredulous. You may have practitioners listening to you and MDs and saying, what do you mean interferon didn't work? I mean, that's our big weapon against viral diseases. What are some of the effects of interferon, and why do they use that to try to get the immune system going?
Well, I can say that it was developed in 1962, and it was mostly used for cancer. And it natural interferon is something that your body produces to kill virus and bacteria. But this synthetic stuff that they give you in the shot causes brain damage, nerve damage, and bone marrow damage. And most of the side effects that people experience are due to those three things. And a lot of it is not reversible. It also causes autoimmune diseases. Arthritis is one of the things that I see people suffer the most from after using interferon, including myself. It's just unbelievable. I get probably right now, it's kind of slow, but about 100 emails a week from people who have used interferon, and they tell me that their life is damaged forever in numerous ways. I see people who their left arm doesn't work anymore, or they have their hair falls out. That usually grows back. But a lot of things, short-term memory. There's a surgeon, that young man is 38 years old, did two shots of interferon, and he was also a teacher, and he was no longer able to teach, and he could no longer perform surgery because it damaged, according to him, it damaged his short-term memory, and he was unable to do those things. And that's, every day I read something, pretty much the stories have a lot of similar characteristics, but when you go to the doctor and they're telling you to use interferon, they don't tell you these things. And so, I have entire studies done on how to recover from interferon because it's such a worldwide problem. And if anybody wants to email me, I can attach these documents and send them to them.
That'd be great. Well, throughout the show, we'll definitely give your contact information. Let's go back in time. So you, unfortunately, like millions of people, were exposed to blood which hadn't been screened to hepatitis C. Take us back to the time when they didn't really do adequate screening, or do they do adequate screening for blood that's good enough to prevent transfusion contamination?
Well, they do today, but I was crushed by a bulldozer in 1979, and I was taken by helicopter to Los Robles Hospital in Thousand Oaks, California, and they gave me four blood transfusions, and that's had to be where it came from. And in 1982, I believe, they developed the first blood test to see if you had hepatitis C, or maybe it was 89. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting all those old times. But 1992 is when they claim they got the blood supply clean. And they claim there's less than 1% that they didn't get out of it, which, you know, a lot of people... It's an enormous amount of clients I have that have not used drugs. They get hepatitis C from going to the hospital, to going to the doctor's office. Apparently, before 92, it was, you know, pretty widespread all over the place, because I think really a lot more people have it than the government says right now, and I think they're in for a surprise. And that's why the FDA recently said that everybody in that age group should get tested. And the reason is because they think that a lot more people have it.
I heard that recently, that they're encouraging people when they come in for blood work to be checked for Hep C and HIV and things, for, I guess, things may have slipped through the system, which is kind of scary. But your book gives a lot of people hope. Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, how, I mean, you were discovered to have it. Did you have any symptomology that led you to go to the doctor to be checked for hepatitis, or was it just smoldering and you didn't know? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I can say that I, you know, normally people start getting symptoms 15 to 25 years after contraction. But what I did is I went in 1991, I went in to get a dental implant. Mm-hmm. And they gave me some antibiotics. And the first thing that happened was I was down, sick. And the dentist said, no, you have to take these. And I'm going, no, these things are killing me. And I meant it. That's how I felt. Mm. And they gave me a different kind. And then they gave me a different kind. And then I ended up in the hospital with bleeding lesions in my colon. So they sent me to a gastro doctor. And he said, wow, you've got way too much ferritin and too much iron in your blood. You need to go to the blood bank, which back in those days, you could just go to the blood bank and they would give you a therapeutic phlebotomy. And they're supposed to discard the blood. And what they did was they put it in a testing bin. And a couple months later, I got this letter saying, hey, you can't donate blood anymore because you have hep C.
Oh, boy. But so did you have hemochromatosis too, or just
no?
Just have excess iron.
I don't have that gene.
Okay.
But about 30% of people with hepatitis C at some point will have too much ferritin, high ferritin, and some of them too much iron. And that
I think from my reading, that's the body's defense mechanism because the body generates free radicals through what's called the Fenton reaction. This is how a lot of our white blood cells generate free radicals, because when they try to engulf a foreign body, i.e. a virus or bacteria or something like that, fungus, they then have to do something with it once it's been phagocytized and engulfed. So they use iron and copper to generate huge amounts of hydrogen peroxide, which is what our body, and this all happens inside the cells in what's called the lysosomes. And it's interesting that that's, because I've seen that before, and I never really knew why, and I'm just kind of piecing it together now.
Yeah.
So that might be a defense mechanism for your body uses iron. You know, that's why with destructive autoimmune diseases, I really check people for iron and curtail the iron, and even for other types of illnesses. And I think some people feel that hepatitis kind of, hep C, has some of the telltale signs of some type of an autoimmunity.
Yeah.
Did you hear that theory, Lloyd?
Well, I know that a lot of people have autoimmune hepatitis, especially after they use interferon. But one of the things people need to know here that have hep C is that you should not use any antibiotic, because antibiotics raise the viral load, especially amoxicillin, which is probably the most popular one handed out like candy by dentists.
Mm-hmm.
2 amoxicillin can raise your viral load 10 million points overnight. And I've seen it happen too many times, and that's why I was feeling really sick when they were giving me the antibiotics, because my viral load was going up so far, it was just ruining me.
Hmm.
And also, as long as I'm there, Nexium, the purple pill for acid reflux,
right?
Prilosec, and any acid pump inhibitor will also raise the viral load dramatically.
Wow.
Overnight, along with the hepatitis A and B vaccine, which they give everyone right when they're diagnosed.
They even give it to kids when they're born.
I know.
I remember my kid, they were coming after this neonate with a needle. I was like, get the hell away. They vaccinated my kid. They're not at high risk for getting hepatitis. What the heck? I mean, the nurses maybe, and maybe the doctor. I am, as a physician, doing phlebotomy and things like that, but not a neonate. But it's just insane.
Well, the problem is that they do this everybody upon diagnosis. They cause them to believe they have to take this vaccine. They do, and they're never the same again.
Mm-hmm.
I see it put the ALT and AST from normal into 1 to 300, and viral loads go up 2 to 10 million points, and it takes a year to 2 years before those numbers start to get back down.
Now, you mentioned ALT, AST. For the listeners who don't know what that is, explain those things.
Those are liver enzymes.
Okay.
And they can do other things, too. But when those numbers are high, you're having some liver damage.
Mm-hmm.
And people with hepatitis C often have those numbers elevated, but they don't have to. Most of the time, they can be put into the normal category just by diet, some supplements.
Right.
But nobody tells them that. Maybe because no, you know, the doctors don't know or don't believe it.
Well, they don't get a lot of training in. I mean, the average doctor doesn't get any training in nutrition class, so they take it as a minor elective, and they certainly don't get a chance to use it in the hospital setting, maybe in private practice, but then they defer it to RDs, who many of them don't have a clue as far as nutrition, particularly by virtue of seeing what types of foods are being served in the hospitals. It goes to show you what, you know, that you're basically poisoning the patients. Anyway, that's my opinion on it. But back to your story. So you had a bad reaction to the antibiotics, and this is when they, so you were diagnosed with Hep C. Now, what happened? Did you totally freak out? Did you go into a deep depression, or how did you handle the news?
No, I didn't get depressed. I thought, well, we've got to get rid of this. And I took this letter to the two doctors that I went to, and one of them said, I don't know what that is, but I'll look into it. And the other, the gastro doctor, he said, well, I'm going to look into this. And he called me back, and he said, yeah, we can get rid of this.
So it was so new back then that even many of the doctors hadn't even heard of this strain of hepatitis. They knew about A and B, but they certainly didn't know about C. Am I hearing you right?
Well, that's the way it appeared to me.
Yeah.
And the doctor, actually, he told me he read 9 studies. But inside the interferon box is this little paper that has the 9 studies on it. I still have some of my original interferon boxes. And in that little pamphlet that comes with it, it says it has an 81% cure rate, which is a lie. And it was really closer to 7%
wow.
back then, but the people would relapse. So I took interferon. They said, okay, we're going to start you on this on January 7th, 1995. And I had a liver biopsy in December of 94. To confirm everything. So they show me how to do the shot. I go home, I do the shot, and it was very much like turning into the Incredible Hulk. I became this monster, dangerous, violent person.
Wow.
And I mean, it was so scary to me. I couldn't believe it. And you know, I'm a person who owns guns. And when I got down off that first interferon shot, I put all my guns in my car and I drove them to a storage facility and put them there.
Wow.
Because that's how dangerous I was. It was not good. And since then, I've had clients who have committed murder suicide on interferon.
Hmm.
I had a client who was a contractor. He had 4 houses framed. And he burned them all down on interferon. I had another client who was an artist who was an extremely peaceful man. He robbed a bank. And to this day, his wife calls periodically. There's, you know, it's been 10 years, and they're still trying to get him out of jail.
Well, you know, the Chinese, in Chinese and ancient Ayurvedic medicine from India, they always say that the organs are connected to certain emotional states, and it seems very true in your case. And the liver, in Chinese medicine, is associated with rage and anger and frustration. So it's not surprising that if this interferon was targeting, I think the Chinese would say if you had anger after this, it would be heat in the liver, massive amount of heat, inflammation. And why it becomes an emotional thing, I don't know. That's a mystery to me, why these emotions have been linked to certain organs. But this is what the ancients have said. You know, and I practice Chinese medicine. So when someone says that, I don't just laugh it off as coincidence. I'm like, wow, that's what the ancients said.
Yeah, well, it's real.
Wow.
And interferon, when you're not being violent, you're curled up in a fetal position in a corner somewhere. And you're looking around, and you kind of know in the back of your mind, this is not how I am.
And you're saying this is a fairly typical reaction versus atypical,
yeah.
Or
no, this is normal. And
wow.
I can tell you, I had this client in Texas. He's just been 12 years now. He's a good man. He builds swimming pools, and he went on interferon. And his wife called me at 2 a.m. one night and said that he shot the family dog and he tore his son's hair out.
Holy
now, this is a... I know this man because when I used to go to do speaking at the Hepatitis Magazine convention in Austin, and I met him down there. This guy was a good, genuine man. Interferon turned him into a monster. And these are just ones that pop into my head while we're talking. This has been going on to me since 1990s. The stories are just unbelievable. Not all of them are quite that radical,
yeah.
But overall there's really nothing good to say about the stuff.
Well, let's talk a little bit about... You went to the naturopathic doctor, which I think was a good move, that's for sure, being a naturopathic doctor myself and professor at the university and teaching the next generation of naturopathic physicians. I think it's wonderful that you found someone like that. Most people will just kind of just give up and they won't keep looking for other alternatives. But what did you do? I read in your book that you got a computer and you started to look for... Were there any other options, and you found stuff? Was it incredulous to you that no one ever told you this stuff, or what?
Well, what I discovered is a lot of American companies looking at different drugs back then, but you couldn't buy them here. They had them in other countries. Like, they were testing something that was a synthetic thymus in Japan, and they said, well, you can go there and use it if you want to, but you can't bring it back. There were things that went on like that,
right.
And still today they have that kind of thing going on, like this new drug they give you with interferon they claim works against genotype 1 that really doesn't. They tested it in Germany first and killed a whole bunch of monkeys with it. But it's a rough path, but Dr. Finnegan, he was a bright man. And he looked at the lab work. He really tried to zero in on this and kill it, along with making everything else healthy. I think his main item was an immune boost that made it so you would kill the virus. And when I did all this, my albumin was at 5, which
wow.
I've seen. That's usually where people's albumin will be if they get well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting when I teach my students about working with viruses. You got to look at it in many dimensions. The first dimension is there are direct antivirals, and then there are things that we call indirect antivirals. You know, interferon would be considered, quote-unquote, an indirect antiviral because it's an... It's one of the cytokines that, I believe, or lymphokines potentially, that then supposedly marshals the immune system to do it. So it's not actually killing the virus per se, but it's supposed to be marshaling your immune system. Based on your experience, doesn't seem like it's so great. But so you have direct antivirals, things that directly have been shown to kill the virus, not only in vitro in a petri dish, but actually in living systems. And then you have the indirect ones that marshal the immune system, which you talk about in your book, like reishi mushroom, which I want to touch base with after we're going to take a quick break in a few minutes. But and then you also have a nice section on different antioxidants that kind of protect the liver from the free radical damage that happens as part of the hepatitis process. And that's why I wanted to just tell folks that listening in the beginning that even if they work in a field where their liver is exposed to lots of poisons, your book and your protocol is valuable for non-viral types of hepatitis, i.e. chemical. I have many auto mechanics, painters. One guy sprays cars for a living. You know, he paints, repaints cars, auto body worker. I have painters and other people, even some patients that are alcoholic that really have benefited from your book and some of the protocols in there. So I guess we'll just take a break now, because it's a good segue into talking about some of the treatments. We've heard a lot about your story. It's fascinating. So for the next half hour after the break, we'll get more into, I want actually some specifics and some things that you think are extremely important for the listeners to know about, Lloyd, okay?
Okay.
Great. So we'll take a break now. Again, you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z. And stay tuned right here to Progressive Radio Network for exciting second half of the program with our guest, Lloyd Wright. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back with our guest, Lloyd Wright, and he is author of Triumph Over Hepatitis C, an Alternative Medicine Solution in Hepatitis C, Do-It-Yourself Guide for Health. And again, standing up against a legion of medical doctors who insist there's no cure, he's done a tremendous amount of research. He's not a doctor. He's a person who actually had the disease and now has been tested for many, many years to be clean of hepatitis C and other viruses. Lloyd, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about on page 218 of your Triumph Over Hep C book, you have a really nice chart of your schedule of botanicals and other things that you have used over a period of time, I guess, to combat this illness. So did Dr. Finnegan give you all these things at once, or did you try them all at once? And then we'll just go through, we don't have time to go through all of them, but we'll pick one of them, some more important things that you think are very important.
Well, he didn't give me all these at once.
Okay.
And some of these didn't even exist back then.
Oh, I see.
But the things like lipoic acid, selenium, NADH, and adrenal, he felt that adrenal was important, because if you don't have adrenal support, your liver doesn't get well like it should.
Interesting.
And thymus, that was an interesting story. He was giving me thymus capsules,
mm-hmm.
and then one day while I was there, someone came in and bought some frozen thymus. And I asked him, I said, what was that? And he said, don't worry about it, you can't afford it. And I'm like, wait, what? I'll decide what I can afford. But that was actually been that cell thymus, and that is one of the key items for health in almost any kind of disease.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the herbs that seem to be helpful. So some of the ones are the hepatoprotective herbs and herbs that kind of move the bile and prevent stagnation. But, of course, one of the most important ones would be milk thistle.
Yeah, it is important. And there's always studies coming out that say it isn't. But in hepatitis C, milk thistle is extremely important.
Right, because it has, you know, it has a reputation amongst people for, you know, protecting the liver against chemicals and things like that.
Yeah, and those bad
mushrooms.
Not
as much viruses, but clearly I think it's very critical for that as well.
Yeah, it strengthens liver cell walls. It makes them stronger so that toxins can pass through the liver without causing as much damage.
Right, and then it kind of doesn't allow things in as well, as far as I remember.
So, yeah, it's very important. I mean, I think most people on Earth should take it.
And then you talked about the frozen thymus extract, NatCell. Now, that's something that's kind of a pretty novel thing.
Yeah, I didn't know this until, you know, the AIDS people get a blood test that the hepatitis C people never seem to get, and it measures T-cell activity.
Right.
And when they take the thymus, their T-cell activity goes up 1,000-fold. And these T-cells kill virus and bacteria. And it does a whole lot more things. Right after I wrote my very first book, Yale School of Medicine came out with a very nice study on why thymus was a good item to use in the fight against hepatitis C, which I thought was pretty cool.
Nice. And you said basically that when you use this thymus gland, it somehow stimulates the different T-cell subfractions to work a little bit better. And, you know, the T-cells are important for viruses and cancer and things like that. But it's interesting that you're actually taking the gland itself. Now, the way I remember in school, Dr. Pizzorno, Joe Pizzorno, one of my professors, very well-known naturopath, talked about that the thymus gland tends to involute or atrophy in many people as they age. And they used to think it was like a vestigial organ in adults because it was so small compared to the thymus gland of an infant. So I find it interesting that you're using things to kind of bring it back to life, assuming we don't know why it goes through this involution. Is it stress? Is it oxidative damage living in the Western world? Who knows why adults, the thymus glands, and who knows if it's just Americans that the thymus gland tends to atrophy? Any ideas on all that?
Well, I've read a lot about it, but I don't know. I know that T cells are stored in the spleen and the bone marrow, and that the thymus gland makes a lot of T cells early on in life and then really doesn't do that anymore. And that taking this frozen thymus really makes a huge difference in many different disease states.
Very interesting immunomodulator. And then another one that comes up is alpha-lipoic acid, and I think that's worth discussing because in your book you say that's the link to getting all your other antioxidants, which again protect the body against cellular damage at the level of the cell, actually at the level of the cell and beyond the cell, the level of the molecules. Free radicals are really what destroys the cell, so the virus must be generating quite a number of free radicals in order to rupture out of the hepatocytes.
Yeah, well, I know that lipoic acid makes a huge difference in liver disease of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Dr. Berkson back in, I think, 1976, was doing an internship in a hospital, and he was given the liver ward, and everybody in there, 79 patients, were supposed to get a liver transplant at some point, and he claims he gave them all lipoic acid, and a few weeks later, 76 of them went home. That's what he says on his tape.
Wow.
And that's pretty incredible. But Dr. Berkson still stresses the selenium, lipoic acid, and milk thistle, and he does it intravenously in New Mexico. And lipoic acid does make a big difference. I remember when Finnegan first gave me that, I could actually feel the difference in my health.
Mm. Very important, yeah. And then I love mushrooms. And particularly, I really have, actually, I designed my own a product for autoimmune disease myself and Dr. Kamai, the natural nurse. And in it is a highly concentrated extract of the reishi mushroom, because reishi tends to have a balancing effect on the immune system. If you need it to fight viruses, it upregulates. If you have autoimmune disease, where some of your parts of your immune system are overactive, it tends to modulate. So I like calling it an immunomodulator versus an immunostimulant. But I know this mushroom has been used for thousands and thousands of years for what the Chinese called heat. They didn't know about viruses back then, you know, but they knew that there was some infectious process creating a lot of inflammation and damage, and they figured out that the reishi, as well as other mushrooms, but reishi being one of the big imperial mushrooms, was very critical. They call it the mushroom of immortality, I believe.
Yeah, I noticed reishi is the one mushroom that does work well with hepatitis C, and I haven't seen the other ones do much for this virus. And there's some studies out of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles that show that reishi actually kills primary liver cancer cells very well. And that's something everyone with hepatitis should be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Do they know why the cancer starts? Is it because the virus just kind of alters the DNA so much and you lose your protective ability to shield the DNA from the damage, and then you end up with mutations? Do they understand how that process kind of, how you morph from a viral thing into the cancer?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I do know that people with hepatitis C get 8 times more cancer than other people.
Yeah.
And I also know they're extremely depleted in selenium.
Okay.
And if they start taking selenium early on and they take it every single day, they have a whole lot less cancer.
Now, selenium is, of course, a great antioxidant for many reasons. I know one of the reasons is it helps regenerate glutathione, which is one of our body's top antioxidants, probably, you know, in the pecking order. Next to or as important as perhaps the alpha-lipoic, although the alpha-lipoic tends to spare your glutathione, as you say in the book here, which is very interesting. But glutathione is one of the ways that it's made out of sulfur. Your body's supposed to take sulfur that you take into your diet by eating really good vegetables. I have people take that have hepatitis take several teaspoons of horseradish a day because I found that it's got so much sulfur that I've actually been able to measure changes in glutathione activity. And we do that through some of the functional medicine testing labs that can then predict and increase the antioxidants in the body. So glutathione is very key. Did you take glutathione?
No, but I do now.
Yeah, okay.
And I didn't know about it back then. There is a new item. It's called S-acetylglutathione.
Yep.
Or glutathione.
Right.
Those big words are not my specialty. Uh-huh. But that particular item, the one with the S, makes a huge difference in people's health that have compromised livers.
Very important. Now, olive is one of these very interesting, you quote actually stuff from the Bible. It's an ancient plant, and it seems to, you know, it's funny, you look at in the Middle East, you look at these olive trees, and some of them have been around since before Christ's time, and they're still growing. So to be so resistant to disease is a very interesting doctrine of signatures, you know. It's like you look at plants that are ancient and can ward off so many different types of infections, and you wonder if they can transfer these incredible chemicals into our body. And you found out that a Dutch researcher found a substance called linoleic acid, and actually they found that was a potent antiviral.
Yeah, it is, and it works pretty well, especially it fights bacteria. People can use it sometimes instead of an antibiotic. But I understand that you have to stop taking olive leaf every 3 or 4 days and stop for 2 days and start over again.
Oh, really? You're supposed to cycle that? That's how you would do that?
That's what I've read.
Okay.
And it seems to work a lot better that way.
Huh.
I mean, just from watching people's response. And a lot of people, you know, that's not written on the bottle, so most people don't know that.
Now, you use, I love this because I just prescribed this yesterday to a patient. Lipotropics or lipotropes. And this is fascinating stuff because it's an ancient, old-time naturopathic medicine, but it deals with this current huge problem we have with something called a buildup of homocysteine in the body. And we're finding that if we don't take these lipotropic agents, and I'll define what they are in a second there. You have a nice list here on page 191 in your book there. But if we don't get things in our body that can shuttle methyl groups back and forth, we make this toxic thing called homocysteine, which of course we know damages the arteries and creates more atherosclerosis, but now they know it damages the brain, the liver. Actually, everywhere in the body is prone to damage through homocysteine, which is just basically another type of free radical that's not supposed to be there if you're eating lots of what they say foods good for your liver. And that includes things that you mentioned there, like black radishes and beets and, you know, asparagus and all kinds of things like that. And then you also include in the lipotropics, it's got lots of these B vitamins and folic acid, particularly folic acid and B12, which are very important to protect the body from the buildup of the homocysteine. And choline, which you say decreases the problem with fatty liver. You know, I have a lot of patients that have fatty liver and they never drop any booze ever in their body. They never had a drop of liquor, and the doctor looks at them like, yeah, right, you're probably, you know, not very forthcoming with your alcohol use, but they have a fatty liver, which is a bad sign of liver degeneration. So do you think, Lloyd, that that hepatitis C preys on the weak? In other words, some people are exposed to these viruses, and if they have a very strong constitution or they're living a good life and they're eating lots of vegetables, they're using they're drinking one of those smoothies a day with all their vegetables, they're taking these antioxidants, do you think they would fall prone to the hepatitis? Do you think it just preys on the weak, or what do you think?
Well, I have a lot of older clients, and some of, you know, the ones that are getting really old are doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who have eaten well and taken good care of themselves. And I wouldn't think that they were weak. I think they were the strong people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mental role plays a huge part.
But then there's like, we see, you know, I work in lots of clinics where we have hardened IV drug users, and unfortunately they're down and out, and their diet's poor, and they're exposed to the elements, and they have hepatitis, and we're trying to encourage them to take control of their life. Maybe they have some mental illness, unfortunately. And they seem to be the ones where the disease just goes rampant and, just basically consumes their liver very quickly. So I guess my point is, you know, it's the old saying, is it the bug or is it the terrain? This is what the old-time naturopaths talked about, probably Dr. Finnegan himself. Is it the terrain? Or is it the bug? Is it the soil? Or is it the actual virus? See, that's my point, is that, you know, and in naturopathic and holistic philosophy, we try our best to change the terrain, change the soil of the patient. Make them healthy. Focus on, we know they got viruses running around, but can we change the constitution of the patient so that viruses don't like it, make their life miserable versus vice versa?
Well, I think it can be changed, and I think sometimes the bug can get the best of livers. I see it happen, but there's things often in the patient's life going on that you don't ever get to know about. I have some very rich and famous, powerful people that are suffering from bad cases of ascites, and you know, all things considered, they're, if it was just the terrain, they would be okay.
Yeah.
So
certainly the bug is very virulent, and the sooner you get properly, and sooner you take action now, like you talk about in chapter 33, and the sooner you get the really good treatment, which you outline excellently on your book, and even give some great case studies and phone consultations that you did with, you know, patients, and even some lab work here where you could see the viral particles dropping amazingly. And I can honestly say that I've actually seen the same types of thing, and I know even Dr. Null, Gary Null, has also seen that and has done quite... I remember years ago listening to him on WBAI and him talking about Hep C and some of the other treatments that he was pioneering back then, using ozone and many other things. So there's many options out there for people.
Yeah, ozone works pretty good if it's done right.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of people don't do it right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, ozone is one of the good items.
Yeah, yeah. So anything that we didn't touch base on, Lloyd, that you'd like to reiterate in the last 5 minutes of the program?
Here? Well, there's some new items.
Okay.
UCLA did a trial on quercetin.
Okay, what's that?
It's an item that's found in mostly red onions and berries and apples.
Mm.
And Dr. New says, she writes in her little flyer here, why are we interested in this bioflavonoid? And she says, in our lab, we found quercetin inhibits hepatitis C completely. So lots of my clients have done that trial. You don't have to go there to do it. They just talk you through it over the phone, and you buy quercetin, and you take it, and it does lower the viral load.
Right, okay.
And there's some good things like proanthocytians found in blueberry leaves that are grown in the Midwest. The other ones don't work, but...
Is that right?
Yeah, there's people at university in Japan did some studies on that and discovered that it does something to the DNA that makes it so it's difficult for the virus to reproduce. And then there's neurinogen, which is an extract from the grapefruit.
Now, yeah, here's a question I had for you, because this is something that's very controversial, because many people... are advised by their medical doctor, and sometimes naturopathic doctors too, that if they're on certain pharmaceuticals, they got to be very careful using anything from the grapefruit because of its upregulation of what's called the phase one cytokines, which are kind of like the way that the liver detoxifies chemicals. It kind of, when your liver gets in contact with a chemical, toluene, benzene, mercury, you name it, even your own hormones, it has to break it down. It goes to the first phase and then the second phase. The first phase is like oxidation. It's a burning process that the liver actually uses. And then the second phase is what they call conjugation, where the body uses methyl groups, the lepotropics like we talked about, sulfur, glutathione, alpha-lipoic, things like that, to then grab that poison and then lead it out through what we call the emunctories, which is the drainage organs of the body. The bowels particularly is most important for the because whatever your liver processes, Lloyd, eventually goes through the gallbladder and out through the bowels. So naturopaths have always said, got to get the bowels clean. It's about 80% of your immune system's in the bowels. But back to the naringin, that certain drugs you should not use grapefruit extracts with.
Yeah, I have that warning label on my bottle.
Okay.
I am the only person on earth that I know that retails naringin. But what naringin does, it stops the virus from moving from one cell to another.
Mm-hmm.
The virus moves on LDL cholesterol from one cell to another, and naringin makes it so the cell can't stick to the cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And I've actually had a few people, it's not normal, but a few who got well, not non-detected, after one bottle of naringin. It's kind of hard to imagine. It doesn't happen very often, but it does lower people's viral load over time. It doesn't absorb as well as one would like, so it has a few problems, but it's worth considering if you're not taking any pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And no one with hepatitis C should be taking pharmaceutical drugs.
Right, because even Tylenol is a deadly poison to somebody with a compromised liver.
Yeah, it is.
So,
Hep C and drugs just don't go together.
Well, we're running out of time, so give us your website and where folks can get your book and read more about your fantastic protocols here.
If anybody wants a free book, they can call me toll-free at 877-676-1615, or they can go to any of my websites. An easy one to remember is lloydwright.org.
And that's W-R-I-G-H-T.
Yeah. And also there's alternativemedicinesolution.com. That's where we provide the products.
Right. Okay. Lloyd, it's been a pleasure to talk to you about this much misunderstood plague. And we really appreciate all your research and putting it all together, particularly that you're not a physician and you kind of took this as your life's journey to do this type of work. We appreciate it.
It kind of has turned into quite a journey.
Okay. Have a great one. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Really excited to bring you this cutting-edge information and want to wish you and your family the best. Stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.